Well, we do have this.
Okay, well, I guess we might as well go forward. Thank you all for being here today, especially extra thanks to SHPD for helping to support us. I'd like to add to our agenda that we will have a discussion to vote in the limited meeting when we talk about the meeting dates. And also, we have two nominations today that we did not receive the final nomination form, so those two will be deferred. Those are the Our Lady of Seven Sorrows Chapel and Cemetery and the St. Joseph Chapel Cemetery and Rectory. So, going forward with our agenda, is there any discussion or suggested changes to our agenda? Okay, let's have a vote to approve the agenda. All in favor?
Motion for the agenda, too? Okay. I move we accept the agenda.
I'll second.
Thank you. There we go. Okay. All in favor of approving the agenda?
Aye.
Thank you. Then the meeting minutes from our last meeting on November 22nd. Would anybody like to suggest any edits or changes?
I move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
It's not on recording.
Let it be so. Let it be
so. It's unanimous. I see four. I see four. I see four. Ayes. Thank you. So for both of those, Bill made the motion and Graham gave the second. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Our nominations today, as we mentioned, the first two will be deferred as we did not receive the final nomination. Now we have the Allison King residence. I believe the person who is going to present this, who is the owner, is not here at this time, but perhaps we can look through the photographs.
Okay. I just texted her.
Okay.
She's in route. She's in Kapolei, and she's trying to...
Looking for the building.
Could we come back to it?
Sure.
Or could we move on to the report?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. So we'll set this aside and come back to this and try to give the presenter a little bit more time. We can move on to the Otsubo Stone Monuments. I'd like to ask if anyone here would be likely to file a
contested case.
Sorry for getting the words here. Were this to move forward? Okay.
Since your permission, would...
Thank you, sir. Would you like to say anything to the board?
Yes, I'd like to address the board for the record, please.
Thank you. Please.
Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes. My name is Russell Mukai. I'm the president of the board of directors for Shinshu Kyokai Mission of Hawaii, where the monument is located. We are the private owners of that monument. And we, right now, since we don't know exactly what's involved, object to having it nominated on both the Hawaii Historic Register as well as the National Register. I submitted several written testimonies. Right now I'd like to speak to this one. You should have a copy of this. So right now I'd like to apologize for the late notice of our church's objections. We're only notified in early March about the hearing. We did a lot of research since then about the multiple nominations for the Otsubo works. Apparently this is the first time our monument was added to that list. Currently we object to the nomination of the property to the state and national registers of the historic places. Our primary objection is that it was done without our knowledge or agreement, and we have no idea how it will affect our church and the areas around where the monument is located. Speaking as the president and representing the board of directors, we will continue to object until we have enough information to make an informed decision and have a discussion and a vote. We will maintain our objection until we know for sure that having a historic property will not adversely affect the day-to-day operations and maintenance of the church. Having said all that, We have the following questions and concerns about the nominations of our property to the state and national register. The first question is, why is this nomination necessary, and why this particular artwork? I'd like to point out, as noted in the nomination, there are three carvers on the monument. Mr. Otsubo is just one of several. There's a disagreement about whether there were actually two or three people listed as carvers. However, everyone does agree that Mr. Otsubo did not work on this piece by himself. I'd also like to have the board correct the ownership of the Hyōchū High monument. On the application, it indicates public-private. I want to make it clear that this is private property and owned by the Shinshu Kyokai Mission. Also, what is the effect to us of having a historic property on our property? For example, will it affect us getting a building permit or having work done on the area surrounding the monument? The kanji characters you see on the monument were painted white a few years ago because one of our members complained that the characters were too difficult to read. Would this have been illegal if the monument was designated a historic monument? And related to the previous concern, the Hawaii Administrative Rules Chapter 198 states that the responsibilities of the owners of the historic property are set forth in Section 6E10 and 343-5 of the Hawaii Revised Statutes. 6E10 states that before any construction, alteration, the landowner shall notify the department and allow the department, meaning you guys, opportunity for review. I believe this will add an extra layer of review and burden if we go in for any building permits. Section 343.5 states that an environmental assessment shall be required for actions which propose any use within any historic site. Although this doesn't seem to be applicable to a monument versus a historic property or site, we need assurances that some bureaucrat somewhere in the city and county or the state will not use this to prevent us from holding events on the church grounds near the monument. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Well, the Attorney General has advised that we don't take action until more of this is sorted out with a contested case. So at this time, we'll just not take any action on this.
I can answer some of the questions that you raised.
Yes.
I can answer them.
Thank you.
I'll start off by saying, I don't know, I'm not familiar with the nomination in detail, but the portion of your property would be affected is the boundary of, where we should place the boundary on the map. I don't believe it's for the entire property.
I agree. I wouldn't believe it's for the entire property, but how far around the monument? We don't intend to do anything to the monument itself, but we are planning to do stuff like resurface the parking lot, which is right next to the monument. There's a grassy area. We intended possibly to put a pond in there. It's right next to the monument. Is that going to be affected by doing any of this?
So, the answer is, we don't know. Because building permits are not our purview. Those are decisions made by the city and county. Whether they decide that we need to review a permit is a decision they make. And I will be the first to tell you that, that decision making is a little bit mysterious. There are times they issue permits without consulting with us where we've already told them you should consult with us on this property. And then the flip side is also true. You can't get permits and you're like, why on earth is this like this?
That is one of our concerns. It's at the decision of some person somewhere in the city and county chain that makes a decision that's going to affect us simply because it's on the register.
So I think the answer is it should not. As I say, that's not something that that the state decides. That's something the county decides. It should not affect in any way your ownership. And I would say, you know, if this had been listed and you came to us and said we want to repaint this to make the, you know, the characters more readable to our members, we would object to that. The United States preservation isn't an outcome, it's a process. There are questions you raised that I can't even begin to answer on this entire nomination, not just not the minor of your property. And then there are decisions made by parties that we have no influence over. I think that's all I can. I guess on 343, again, that's a decision made elsewhere. We do not very often see environmental assessments that are written solely because it involves a historic model.
Okay. Speaking for the church, let me just say, what would happen if the monument is entered into the register is we lose control, and we would be at the mercy of any bureaucrat within the city and county or the state, or if it's on the national register somewhere else, making decisions for us.
Well, I will say, I'm not arguing in favor of the nomination or against it. I have no opinion on that. But I will say that, sort of the worst case scenario is that it will undergo a review by this office, by the State Historic Preservation Division. 6E10 does say we're supposed to reach agreement with the owner about how the property will be treated, and if we can't do that, we have to buy it. Well, I tell you, even if we thought that was a good idea, we don't have the money. So that's never on the table. And in terms of, if, for example, if you want to do something on your property and city and county sent it to us, we would review it. And our decision would be based on, what our review would be based on is whether or not we think the property is a significant historic property. And that's independent of listing it. So we might decide it's a significant historic property, and we think that there are some things that ought to be done, to help protect historic property. And then we would make a recommendation to the permitting agency saying we think these are things that ought to be done. And then it's up to the ultimately again. It's not our call, but generally speaking, the city and county just attaches our requirements. It's something that would happen in a dialogue with the property owner. And the same thing is true if it's on the National Register. And National Register would not trigger by itself a federal review. It would trigger at least in theory, city and county sending it to us. Again, certainly within the boundaries of whatever is on that nomination for the monument. But a federal review would only be required if you have to have some sort of federal permit or you're using federal money to do whatever you need.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Chapman. I'm the vice chair of this committee, but I just wanted to compliment you on your research and how articulate you are about your concerns. We have a history of not listing properties that owners do not want to list. I think that's been our past history.
So I'm only aware of one instance where the board listed a property on the Hawaii Register over the owners of
And I
not entirely articulated objection. And it is fair to say that if you object to the National Register listing, there is a process for that. And ultimately the decision to list on the National, she's been made by a Park Service employee, and I swear to God, this person's job title is keeper of the National Register. I'm not making that up. The keeper is prohibited from listing the property under the objection of the property.
And I think we probably should, I don't know if you're aware of the context of this nomination, but it's a kind of, I guess, a research project in some ways of a scholar in the community who's very interested in this history of this art. And so she's gone through several layers of this, trying to think of how to better recognize it. So it's kind of a passion project, I guess you'd call it. So not typical of our nominations.
For our part, we can certainly see that and agree. Two churches who were nominated without our knowledge have already voiced objections.
Well, thank you for coming and speaking today.
Thank you for
coming. There will clearly be more discussion.
And I compliment you too on saying the State and National Register of Historic Places. Very few people actually get that right.
Even people in the business.
Even our board.
Could we move on to the staff report and come back to the Allison King residence? Okay. Thank you.
So, start with the discussion. Graham and Matt's confirmation hearing was Wednesday at 1 o'clock, this Wednesday, before the Water and Land Committee. This is a change years gone by, used to be the judiciary, but it moved to now and then. I don't think it matters as we've been through this process. These kinds of confirmation hearings are rarely controversial. They tend to be more love fests than anything else. They're just thrilled that people want to take this on. Not just this, but all of almost. We have 178 boards and commissions staffed by volunteers, so by and large, the senator's thrilled when people are willing to take on these responsibilities. If you want to write testimony, the testimony has to be submitted by 1 o'clock on Tuesday. If you do so, and you are a board member, please make it clear that you're doing this as a private citizen. But anyway, we'll be there to provide testimony. In support. So this year has been a year like no other. This is my 10th session. And I think in large part because there is such an enormous budget surplus that people are racing to do stuff that they've just looked at in the past and gone, this is impossible, can't make it happen. And at this point in the session, we usually have two or three bills and two or three resolutions still alive, and we have right now 12 bills and four resolutions. And some of these, just for those who have not been through it before, bills that die in some of the process sometimes resurface as resolutions. The substantive difference is that, of course, a bill is the law, and we have to do our best to comply with it. Whereas a resolution is something that we decide whether we want, whether we think it's a good enough idea to invest time and effort in it. So just to run down quickly the bills that are still alive that affect shipping. So, House Bill 201 is alive. It has passed through all of its committees, and on both sides of the House, it's just awaiting floor vote in the Senate. And assuming that the Senate as a whole votes on it, then it will go to a conference committee between the two houses. This I should tell you what that's about, huh? So it clarifies the definition of historic property by adding, basically eligibility of the Hawaii Register to the current criterion, which is 50 years old. So we have been I have been trying since I got here to get that added to the law, because I think, you know, it doesn't matter what age you use, age alone is a valid criterion. And this is the furthest it's ever gotten. It's the, let's see, Cindy Evans tried twice, Laura Thielen tried once or twice. Rep Tarnas tried last year, and then Rep Ichirama tried this year, and it looks like at least they'll get a discussion between the two houses. Not sure it'll survive.
This is for this proposal to make it 100 years or no?
Well, I mean, so it actually started with a proposal to change it, the criterion from 50 to 100. Ichirama has added the Hawaii Register as the criterion. 50 years in the Hawaii Register or 100 years, whether it's on the Hawaii Register, whether it's eligible for the register or not. I think it's a needless complication to add the 100 years in there, but we've objected to that. But I really don't think that matters. I think that we would regard it as an enormous problem if it's 50 or 100 in it, and that's it.
So I'm still confused, Alan. What's the point of the 100 years, meaning it's automatically listed if it's 100 years, or?
None of this is creating a, you know, requiring listing. It's simply for the purposes of, you know, the definition of historic property. Right now the definition is, you know, it's 50 years old, it's, you know, it's a historic property. And so for the purposes of things like 6842 review, historic property is a building or an archaeological, you know, building maybe. It's 50 years old.
Or more. Or more.
50 years old. Yeah.
And what is the point of the
100?
I'm sorry?
That's what we're getting at, I hope. So.
Okay, so the point of that is, you know, 50 years is a, you know, anything that is, relies entirely
Thank
on,
you.
You know, age alone to determine what is and is not historic. So the point of adding the whole thing to say it's eligible for the Hawaii Register means it has to meet one of the four criteria for a significance for listing in the Hawaii Register.
It seems that 100 years just complicates this, right?
Well, I mean, it's, yeah. So if they finally decide they're going to leave the Hawaii Register criteria. Plus, you know, 50 years plus the Hawaii Register criteria, which is the way it reads. It says basically 50 years plus the Hawaii Register, or 100 years. Well, you know, I think
doesn't make sense.
I think it's pointless, but I also think it's harmless, as long as the Hawaii Register is.
Well, just as it becomes a confusing number kicking around. And as in the newspaper article, it suddenly found that, like, they're shifting from 50 to 100 is significant.
Well, that's, I mean, there is, you know, there is support from realtors and contractors basically to make it 100 years because, oh my God, you know, after 3 years of planning for this building, we now have to wait for 30 days for Shipkin to review our permit. Stuff like that. There's, you know.
It seems like it would. We have so many properties listed that are not going to meet the 100 year.
Well, it wouldn't, this way it's drafted now, it would not delist anything, but it would also prohibit the board from listing, you know, if it were 100, it's 100 years and there is nothing else in it. If they just change it from 50 to 100, it would mean that the board would be prohibited from listing a 99-year-old building. You know, the existing listings would not change. Would not be affected by it, but you know, yeah, you're right. But you know, the World War II ended less than 100 years ago. Statehood was less than 100 years ago. The entirety of Vlad Osipov's career is in the last 100 years. So I mean, we would fight strenuously if it's just 100 years.
Well, you know, there's the developer side that's saying we don't want it, but then the house homeowners would be presumably they're in the pro-preservation camp because they want to get their properties listed.
This is, my view is that this is largely about, we want to do it, we don't want anybody to suggest we should do, you know, consider anything else. Because, you know, at the first hearing, the Contractors Association got and said, you know, homeowners are, you know, they shouldn't have to go through this process just because it's 50 years old. Well, you know, the legislature exempted most private homes and, you know, single family homes and town homes, did that 8 years ago. So that's, I mean, fortunately, they asked this guy to testify before they, you know, the committee had any questions for me, so I could get that on the record. And I will say they haven't repeated that in their testimony, but the same thing comes up, basically. We want 100 years because we want to do it. It's this idea that any regulation is a burden on the property owner.
Well, it's an opportunity in our case, right?
Yeah.
To be listed and to get the tax abatement and all that. So.
Well, it makes it eligible for the state tax credit.
Exactly.
And potentially the federal credit as well. So, I mean,
I don't know what will happen in the community. There's a fair chance that it will just die, in which case it will remain the existing I don't, you know, and there's also a chance that it will be 50 years plus a Y register or 100 years, which then there are if you've got a term paper that said that, you would know what the heck you're talking about. But I don't think, you know, administratively from our side, there's
that many differences. How many committees is it referred to?
I'm sorry?
How many committees is it referred to?
Well, right now, it's just, it's gone through all of the committees at this point. It's just, it has to go through, the only thing remaining is a floor vote by the full House. And if it passes that, then it will, then they will, each House will form a conference committee and they will sit down and try to work out any differences in language. And I would have to go back and look at the versions to see, see what the differences are. I mean, they have, committees often put what they refer to as a defective effective date. So, this would take effect in July 1st, year 3000. And then another committee will say we'll have an effective date of 2100. And so that's a difference between the two bills, and that's enough to force a conference committee. We love to have these conference committees. But it also means that committees can keep measures alive that some of the committee members would just as soon vote down, but they don't. If you sit through a hearing, it's very rare to hear a committee member voice a no. You do get, we have a class of votes that are yes with reservations, which counts as a yes vote. But it also, it indicates that we don't have uniform consensus on it. So.
But you'll be able to have an opportunity to explain the complications of this?
At a minimum, we'll write to each of the committees, we'll write a letter saying, what we think is good about this, where we see potential problems. And then, depending on what, Chair Chang, Don, what her opinion is, we may actually contact the committee members.
The paradox would be the Patagonia project could still go ahead because they could get listed on the National Register.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I think 100 years by itself is a problem. But, it would not change anything on the federal side. So, potentially the review board would be faced with, this is, This building is 65 years old. We think it's eligible, but we can't list it in the Water Register, but we can list it in the National Register.
Exactly. It would be confusing.
Yeah, I mean,
I got to admit, the whole, I don't know if you ever looked into it, there are about 3 dissertations and 20 articles about why did they come up with 50 years. And basically, it started out with the Treasury Department on importing antiquities was 100 years. Mm-hmm. I think it was Ernest Connolly, who you may have remembered. I think he just said, let's make it 50.
Well, unfortunately, I don't remember his name, but Ernest Connolly, when he was keeper, his deputy, he taught preservation law classes. And I can't remember his name, but we were sitting having dinner together, and he was telling the story. He said, Lyndon Johnson met Nikita Khrushchev in a small state college, actually a teacher's college in New Jersey. Well, unfortunately, I'm drawing a blank on the name. And, Johnson came back and told the staff, I want this listed in the National Register. This was like 1967, I think. Had it been 60. Couldn't have been any later than 67, but I was still in high school. And that's Glasgow State. And, the keeper staff said, gee, we've got this 50-year rule of thumb. We can't list it. But, when I tell the story, normally I say, who here has heard of the Glassboro Sunday? I raise my hand. The only reason I knew about it, because I grew up in New Jersey. Nobody else on the planet remembers this thing. So the idea, of course, is 50 years is to give people enough time to look at something and say, enough time has passed, we can really evaluate whether this was really important or just seemed important at the moment. It is an arbitrary number, and that's always going to be a problem. The National Register, of course, has allows exceptions. In fact, the board has utilized it in the past. But the state, the Attorney General's position on the state is 50 years is an absolute great line distinction. I, at one point, talked to them about writing into rule with an exception. And they didn't actually say, no, don't do it, but they said, yeah, this is a bad idea. This is not the way we read the law.
It's always been a bit confusing, though, to say historic property, because some people think, well, that means it's eligible or listed, and other people think, well, that just means it's 50 years old, and there has been confusion. I mean, even on the SHPTE 6E form, like you mentioned, said, does this affect a historic property? It's like, when are they asking?
Yeah.
Something that's already identified as historic or something that's 50 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we have tried to provide that clarity in referencing 6E2, which provides the definition that stands right now to historic property where it's 50 years old.
So, moving on, because we have a lot of them. So, HB 203 is still alive, although it has two committees left in the Senate, water, land, and labor, as a combined thing, and then, of course, the Ways and Means Committee. That would allow SHPTE to keep its, most of our staff are exempt from civil service, which allows us to pay what our budget would permit for civil service. If we become civil service, then we'll start with the salary schedule developed by the area. That's still alive, but I'd say it's probably fair to say it's on my support. This place, it's late enough in the session that I think it's unlikely to pass. House Bill 1054 is still alive. This bill authorizes SHPTE to hire third-party reviewers for affordable housing projects if we're unable to complete our review in 60 days. There were 5 or 6 bills authorizing that, the zoning for two vector library companion bills. They are significantly different. On the Senate side, the last committee is Ways and Means, which is chaired by Donovan Delacruz, and he's the first person I ever heard about the idea for third party review. So I support those things. I think it was certainly for the conference, and I agree with what the final goal is going to be. I think there's a tremendous amount of support for the idea, in large part because people don't understand what it is. Frankly, I just don't think there's anybody to do those reviews. I mean, I've talked to a number of archaeological firms, and they all say the same thing, which is, we can't do all the work our existing clients want us to do. We can't keep up with the workload, so we can't possibly take on something like this. So, we'll see what happens. The original version had DLR paying for these contracts, and we don't have a budget for that. So
you're saying Donovan was kind of the source of this? He was pushing for this?
I don't know what the source was. He's the very first person ever mentioned it to me. Actually, it was he and Lieutenant Governor, now Lieutenant Governor, and Sylvia Root was the finance committee chair. They first brought it up. So I'd be surprised if it doesn't pass in some form. Whether or not it has any dealings about this, I think are much less clear on that. House Bill 1508 authorizes funds, grants for national and international repatriation, which Schiffer would administer. And the initial draft was $1.5 million, and what actually comes out of it is, we'll see what finance and Ways and Means think of it. House Concurrent Resolution 73 establishes a working group for repatriation, national and international repatriation of artifacts.
And human remains or just artifacts?
The House, this HCR 73 is just artifacts. So there is a bill that would offer, covers human remains and presumably funeral objects and so on, but that's not what the question says. I'm not in favor of working groups because they need work and they don't come with resources. But I'm in favor of the idea. That clearly should be, that's going to be clear. We'll see what happens with that. House Concurrent Resolution 84 calls on the state auditor to do a performance audit of SHPD. Remember, these are resolutions, they're not laws. There was a Senate Concurrent Resolution last year calling on the state auditor to do the same thing in January. Another House Concurrent Resolution 104 calls on us to figure out how to change all of the public properties that have Diamond Head in them to Miahi, to use the whole name. I'll have a hearing and deal on that one next week. I have to wait for testimony, and I hope to God I get it done today before, because I don't want to be writing it tomorrow. SB 75 would fund a statewide survey for architectural properties, archaeological properties, and burial sites. The original draft had $1.5 million in it. Of course, now the actual funding level will be determined by Ways and Means. And the Finance Committee, it has passed all of the committees except the Finance Committee in the House. So, I think I think there's a fair chance this is going to, pass. Whether we can put a dollar in at the end of the day or $100,000 or what, that's way too early to know. This year's budget surplus is over $2 billion, or anybody got that. And the has been very generous in
any money up to this point. SB 734, we created an interagency working group to and fund an interagency working group to come up with a plan for dealing with sea level rise and extreme weather events for burial sites. That's waiting for a joint hearing between the judiciary and board of man of the house and the judiciary chair. We will not be dead. So it's not officially dead, but it's dead. What is this? 15, State Senate Bill 1352, which is a companion of HB 1054, the third party review. That's also alive. That's crossed over. That's waiting action by the Finance Committee. So we're down to the two. The two money committees to decide whether that bill is going to pass the vote. As I say, I'd be very surprised if it doesn't pass in some form. Senate Bill 1535 allows the Director of the Transportation Department to exempt projects for pedestrian safety and bikeways from city review, except in historic districts. That's waiting action by the Finance Committee. Senate Bill 1609, funds grants for the sea companion bill for the HB 1508, the funds repatriation. What else? So last we have Senate Concurrent Resolution 68, which directs SHPD to get Kalani Marsh listed as a National Historic Landmark.
Sorry, which property?
Kalani Marsh. And having been through two of those, I'm thankful that I'm near the end of my career. Because if we started tomorrow, this would not get done before the end of the year. And we got the national, the NHL, for the nomination council chamber, which was an absolute slam dunk NHL, took us 7 years. Sage Memorial Hospital Nursing School, which is the first nursing school for Native Americans, took 11. Less obvious that it was in it. Don't know what we'll do with that one. That's been referred to Waterland, and I swear to God, there is a committee in the Senate. Transportation, culture, and the arts. How do those all go together is a mystery. And then Senate Concurrent Resolution 1116 calls on the state auditor to do a performance audit with SHPD. That's on the Water Ban Committee hearing schedule agenda for today at 1 o'clock. And that's where we stand. Basically 60 days before the end of the session.
Like I said before, I think if we could get the funding for a statewide survey, that would be great.
Senator Inouye has supported this. This is not the first time she's introduced the bill. This is the first time that, you know, Ways and Means didn't kill it before it got out of the start of it. So I would be thrilled with that.
I guess my question on repatriation, would that be funding to like purchase objects that are in like coming up for sale at Sotheby's or something? Is that basically it?
The artifact repatriation is a resolution calling for the development of a plan. So I don't know if it passes and we decide we actually have to do something about it, I've been on working groups that are an enormous amount of work. I don't think this would be, but that would be one of the questions that we'd have to address. And I do think, so for example, the repatriation of burials, and artifacts in the United States, it's not a trivial thing, but it's not a major
project to take on because the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act required museums that, you know, to do an inventory. And, you know, and the last time I looked, over 600 museums have given their, you know, have published notices of inventory petition. So you take somebody sitting down going through that. You know, getting them repatriated is another question. I guess more complicated, but at least you have something, you have a list to start with. I mean, start talking about international repatriation. I mean, there's no way to even guess what museum, you know, you have to go and look at every museum more or less individually. That's enormous.
Assuming these would then be also looking at objects that were in breach of the UNESCO agreement, right? The 1972 agreement, right?
I think if you would.
Stolen property after 1972, right?
Yeah. But I mean, you know, as I say, this is just, it's simply the first step is to come up with a plan. And I can think of more complexities to doing that than I can solutions. And since there is no money for it this year, you know, the Council on Revenue panicked when they saw this revenue surplus this year and reduced their projections for next year by, $2 billion. So
a billion here, a billion there, soon you're talking real money.
Exactly. So we'll just have to see how that goes. But I mean, I think it's an important issue.
I would guess, though, that a lot of Hawaiian artifacts that were already would have been pre-1972, I suspect.
Well, I'd be surprised if you were wrong. I mean, I would guess that they are, if they're anywhere, they're in England. You know, except for the stuff that's new.
In France, maybe. Germany
given the English involvement with Hawaii, that would be, seems like a more likely place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff that's international. The Smithsonian is probably the hot spot in the U.S. And that's a whole different issue because the Indian Graves Protection Act doesn't apply to the Smithsonian.
But even in England, a lot of this was, even the Cook materials were at auction by the 1820s, already being purchased, and that provenance of that sort, right?
And yeah.
You'd have a hard time making a case they were, quote, stolen at that point, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the way that the Native Americans, when the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act deals with it is, it creates a class of artifacts that are referred to as items of cultural patrimony. And the idea being, you know, these things are property. And, you know, if an individual actually owns them, they can legitimately sell them. But there are certain artifacts, these things that are items of cultural patrimony, are things that conceptually don't belong to an individual, they belong to the culture. And those things cannot be sold. So if you're in possession of an item of cultural patrimony, you can't do it. So if I steal Ralph's car, and sell it to Katie can never own it because I never owned it. And that's the same concept with items of cultural patrimony.
But there's always been a cutoff date, right? I mean, that's why the English, let's say a Hogarth painting is being sold to an American museum, they'll have to raise money to be able to counter the offer, right? So.
Well, I'm sure this was a joke, but I mean, during one of the WAM briefings, Donovan Dela Cruz suggested that the Dunbar, the Division of Boating and Ocean Recreation, that they sell figurines as a way to raise money. So we announced a bake sale for next week. I know Dela Cruz was joking when he said that. So that's sort of where we stand. I mean, you know, I have to say, if for those of you who are not aware, Donovan Dela Cruz has been an enormous supporter of SHPD. And Sylvia Lucros, too, but she's not in the House anymore. So, I mean, we have had tremendous support over the last decade, you know, from the legislature as a whole, but the money committees in particular, and as an accountant friend of mine likes to say, is, you know, money's where the rubber hits the road. It really doesn't matter what the legislation says. If it's not funded, it doesn't matter.
Well, we already have the survey of Wiowa, right?
Well, we have, you know, we have partial surveys here and there. Some of them, I think, meet our contemporary standards. Some of them didn't even meet the standards
of the time.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, you know, with the way I broke it down, I mean, I think you could get, you get an awful lot of the state building surveyed for, you know, not a huge amount of money. You know, you get to archaeology and various sites, it's a different matter. You know, but I think, yeah, I mean, I would be thrilled if we could get that, if that survives and we get a substantial amount of money. It's not work we would do in house. We don't have the resources for that. We would have to contract it out.
Well, thank you, Anna.
Yeah, that's it. Any questions?
Yeah, any questions?
Any questions?
Okay. Thank you. I'd just like to quickly go back to Otsubo Stone Monuments because Laura Ruby has now arrived, and the members from the Shinshu Kyoya Mission have returned. And so, Laura, I just wanted to let you know that we asked if anybody would likely file a contested case, which they have stated that they would. And so the Attorney General has advised that we don't take action on a potential contested case and to allow further discussion to try to get things to be worked out. So we're not gonna take action on the nomination at this time and to allow more discussion.
I did talk to Mr. Mukai, the president of Shinshu, and perhaps one of them is Mr. Mukai. So he will tell you what conversation, which I think clarifies their position.
Yeah, and he did get up and actually give a statement, which we also received in writing, and you can also receive a copy of that.
I didn't receive any copy.
Well, we just received it today because he came to speak, but he also gave us a printed copy, so you can also receive.
We made copies. There might be some still on the table behind you. If not, we can make another.
So this one.
But for this nomination, there will be need to be some further discussion about having them allow more information about how this will affect them, and whether or not that we, you know, you will want to continue to try to include that
and
item.
And also, there could be clarifications on the SHPD webpage that says that reassures property owners how this will benefit them and not inhibit them. And I think that is the main thing. Over 20 nominations I've done successfully now, and I can tell you that that is an overriding concern every single time, and so it needs clarification. The Coconut Wireless is not putting out the right information.
Yeah. Okay, so we're not gonna take any action on this at the point, but there will need to be more discussion between the SHPD office and
will it be presented, or can a partial be presented?
We've decided already to not take action today.
But after my driving out here, why? Will we have a discussion that I can take part in? I mean, I prepared everything if...
So, I mean, I think that's up to the board, but I mean, or the Attorney General is clear that, you know, it's their advice that if somebody is, you know, notifies the whatever the board and commission may be, that they intend to, you know, exercise their right to request a contested case. The advice from the Attorney General is that the board not take action until that matter is resolved.
Well, can it be resolved during this time that we're here?
You may be able to reach agreement with the objecting parties, but it's got to be reduced to writing because we have an objection in writing. And so I would say, unless you can get an objection to, you know, a change in the objection from the objecting parties that can be given to the board at this meeting, I don't think we can resolve it for the purpose of the board today. Whether the board wants to hear the presentation is a matter for the board to decide, but they, you know, they're advised not to take action on it. And so they could hear essentially the report if they wanted to, but can't vote on it. And they're advised not to vote on it.
How many properties in total, Laura?
There's five that I recommended, but I could split apart any of them for that, you know, if that's a concern. They're all really worthy, and it's, I mean, I could go into it why Reverend Irene Matsumoto, I and Harriet Natsuyama, the granddaughter, we went with her, we took her to lunch, we talked to her about everything. I think it was somewhat of a misunderstanding that she didn't talk to us again about the importance of that particular nomination. I can split it apart. I can split it into, you know, individuals.
So there are five in total, and there's objections for two?
Yeah. That's the Palolo Kanaan Temple. And that, I both Harriet and I tried to reach her yesterday after we found out that she had written this very long objection. I think she just didn't understand what we were doing. That we're not affecting any part of the property. It's only the monument that's there. And I can make the same further argument for the Shinshu people here too, that it's only about the monument, it's not about the property. And it's about something that will come along the way in a few years' time, namely all the State Foundation, Culture of the Arts, the art public places. Many of those, like Mobikaji and Sato Abe and all, they're going to come 50 years very soon, and that's going to be a consideration too that has to be made and maybe clarified with Shifty.
Alan, with the multiple property nomination.
Yes, like before there's somebody behind you that had a hand up.
In regards to the contested case, two parties submitted contested case requests. One of them is not here to withdraw that request and resolve that regardless. So there's nobody here from Palolo to do that. So at this point, you know, there's no way of resolving this in my mind.
Can we split it apart? That's the question.
Well, I think we have your nomination, which we've read, and all appreciate the amount of work that you've put into this and your appreciation for this property. I would myself prefer that some of these concerns get addressed and then you come back and present on the ones that will in the end be included. You know, and I understand you could present on the ones that aren't, but I think I would prefer myself that we wait until that has been resolved.
Well, I believe that it'd be Dr. Downer and yourselves that would want to help clarify the people that are here representing.
Back to my question, on a multiple property nomination, I mean, is there an expectation? I mean, basically, it's drawing up a broad sort of context for future nominations in addition to nominating existing properties. I mean, is it possible to have us to agree upon a multiple property nomination, and then, as Laura points out, as time passes, more properties become eligible, they could simply be added into that multiple property nomination?
Yes. And I think, yes, administratively, that's, and in fact, I think that's...
That's how it was originally designed, of course, right?
I mean, it's not, they would have to still be individually reviewed.
Of course.
They have to come before the board and all that, but yeah.
But let's say, since we're not ruling on it today, but would it be possible to rule on the general concept of this multiple property nomination with this view as three properties that have agreed to be part of this initial step?
I think not. I think the nomination includes the properties that are in it. I don't see how the board can segment it that way.
You couldn't pick the three that are willing to be on it. Yeah, I kind of remember when they
that would change the whole nomination.
To the person drafting the nomination, and then they could revise the draft and resubmit it. But if that was allowed, you would essentially be telling somebody who's drafting a nomination, if you just cut this portion out, then the rest of it can be listed. Or if you make these adjustments, then it'll get listed after it's adjusted without you seeing the final document and reviewing what that looks like to see if it is real, true, complete, and meets the criteria for listing. Mm-hmm. So it could pose a little bit of an administrative challenge. And then on our end, when we go to do like 6010 reviews, mm-hmm. Like we would need that document to be as clear as possible, so we know what the parameters of the historic properties are, what's contributing, etc.
Well, I know this dates me, and Alan will remember this RP3, right? The whole point was to put everything in a multiple property context, so they gave you more, how'd you say, agility to move things in and out of their categories, so that when one Greek Revival house was torn down, you can move another one into that category. But I mean, this broadly fits that idea, right? And
it could potentially. Yeah. I think, yeah, the nomination can be written such that it takes on like that larger contextual component on the multi-property form as the overlay, and then each individual site would have its own nomination document that had that overlay form applied
right.
to it. That tie them all together, I guess, is a way to explain it.
But I know that it's been a passionate project for Laura, and something that she sees as a preservation project too. And I'd love to see some way of us moving ahead at some point on this.
The question is, I think the question is on this particular nomination that we have contested case for.
Right.
The AGS has recommended against it. I don't know how the board can sort of pick and choose the parts of the nomination they want.
No, she would have to revise it.
So I think it would have to be done.
Yeah, she'd have to revise it.
Before the board acts.
We would need, if we're going it, if the recommendation is to advise her to draft it as a multi-property, we would work together to do the multi-property cover sheet, which is the part where you put the larger context about how all of these resources tie together. So it would be basically like using some of the information we already compiled to put into this cover sheet that would then be applied to every single individual site as you either identify them or they become of age to be listing, if that makes sense. So.
And we'd be able to vote on that, right?
Yeah, it would be part of the like, so if the next meeting we have a draft of this new sort of format with the multi-property form, then each site that, if the parameter is, if each site that gets owner consent, you know, gets their individual form, and then they all get submitted together with this one cover sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And then as new ones come in, a new form will be drafted for that individual site, the old cover sheet will be applied, and then come to you again and say this fits within this multi-property designation.
But you agree, this seems to be a way to deal with it, wouldn't you think? You set out the criteria for what constitutes an eligible property under this multiple property nomination. And
it makes sense to me. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that would be my recommendation.
Would there be a benefit of having Laura address this even in the least to explain
maybe.
So she has come out today?
Well, she has presented to the board before.
Okay.
No, it's a different one. This is an entirely different nomination. It's meant to address the quality of the monuments as opposed to the history of the monument workshop.
I think it'd be great for you to discuss further with Shifty the multiple property and see if that works for.
Well, because all of these folks are here, you folks want to be able to explain to them why, things can go on the state and national historic registers, and why their properties, internal we know to buildings or structures will not be affected, and why something that might be external will not be affected either.
That was discussed. Yeah.
Are they clear? Is that a clarification for those?
Well, discuss that if something is listed in the National Register, I believe that Dr. Downer did address that if something is listed in the State Register, not the National Register, it is up to the Department of Planning and Permitting in terms of the city and county of Honolulu to identify which properties that have been listed require 6E10 review. So it's really out of our hands. A property owner is supposed to consult with us before doing a project that includes a property that's been listed, but then the city and county has its own ability to flag certain projects or permits and have the project proponent have to come to us for review. So he sort of addressed that earlier on. So there is a component potentially, but it's up to possibly the city and county.
So there will be further discussion with themselves and SHPD and with yourself as well.
I think I'm still not clear. If this is the monument on a larger property, a parcel, this is only about the monument, it's not about the parcel. So if it requires some other additional splitting of, proposals coming from SHPD, it's maybe not there. You know, for example, if you're doing a building and you have a garage that's derelict and not old enough or whatever, you make it as not contributing. But when you have something that you're presenting that has to do with the worth that SHPD should be considering, then how is it just by itself and not the rest of the property?
Well, even in your scenario, like say there's a house, like a residential single family dwelling that's been listed in the Hawaii Register, and there's a brand new garage on the property that was built in say the 90s, but the house is listed, the garage is not contributing. If that property owner wants to, say put a pool in their backyard, and the pool would be a brand new thing, it's not a direct alteration of the house, that pool permit may still be flagged for 6E10 review by the city and county of Honolulu because there's a historic site listed on that TMK. So that's how that's one way it works, I should say. There's a multiple different avenues for people coming into us, but that's one way that it may work. And our review would be like, you're not doing anything to the historic house, or whatever the resolution may be, but we may still be required to review the project as a whole because it has been flagged in the city's records that TMK has a historic property on it. And the same goes for archaeological sites. If a vacant parcel of land has an archaeological site that's been found there, it may ding a review with the city and county of Honolulu, even though you don't know that there's anything subsurface there.
If the project is on a parcel that's whatever the structures are on it are over 50 years old, but it did not intend to go on the historic register, but only, and I'm speaking to the monuments, would be the intention to go on the historic register.
I think if I could paraphrase some of the objections, I think it's the concern about whether some future person and permitting is going to understand the nuances of this as well, and whether this would then sort of represent an undue burden on them. I think that's the concern.
Yeah. And I think maybe that might be one of the reasons why we're suggesting that this be deferred to another meeting so we can resolve this outside this meeting with additional information for any of the property owners that they may need, rather than try to get into the nuances of how 6E works in a review board meeting, but that's up to the review board.
If I could just say one more thing. Both of the two contested letters that I rarely received, the monuments were themselves from other locations in the past and never probably had the authorization or the certification or any kind of paperwork. They were simply given or obtained to the temples. So there's a movement and a slippage that comes through if it's sitting on the property now, but it had not come as some bona fide thing that was declared on the property. What happens then?
That's probably their concern.
Yeah. I mean, these were a long time ago.
I know, but they may have that kind of concern about wondering who. So the repatriation, in a way, who owns the object, that may be something that would come up. So I think we're well advised to follow the advice of staff on this.
Agreed.
Do we need to make a motion?
Well, we've already deferred it, so I don't know if we need anything else.
Okay.
I have a question concerning boundaries.
That has to be clear in the nomination.
Right. I'm trying to find out what the smallest discrete boundary would be. Is it the TMK? Is it?
Well, if it's the TMK, then that should flag it in DPP that everything in the TMK. I mean, the guidance, and the board does rely on the Park Service's guidance, but if they recommend the smallest boundary that's possible to sort of protect the property. So when you're talking about the monuments, I'm not sure it would have to be much larger than the footprint of the monument itself. But in terms of the questions that we've been asking here, this horse I think is dead for now. The question that the temple raises is one that we can't answer. We can never tell them, DPP, the city and county will never send something to us because you're doing something that won't affect in Jessica's example. So you've got a historic home, you've got a new, more or less new garage. We don't like the garage, we're going to tear it down. That doesn't mean DPP will not look at that and say, well, because the standard that's in the law is that if the permitted activity has the potential to affect the historic property, they're supposed to send it to us. And we would probably say, yeah, it could still come to us, and we would say, yes, it's not going to affect it. Mm-hmm. But it still takes the time for it to get to us and get in and out of our system.
And that TMK is identified as having a historic property on it. So that's what DPP will see.
But there is no listing of boundary that would include only the base of the monument and the monument.
In a way there would be, but can I throw in something on this? I mean, the whole issue of boundaries, there's bulletins on how do you describe boundary, and it has to do with when you determine significance. So let's say you have a farm and you want to say, well, it's not, I mean, actually they jump on you if you say protection, because that's not the issue. It's, do you contain the property as enough to, I guess, convey a sense of its significance? Mm-hmm. So if you're conveying it as a farm, you have to have enough land to show it's a farm. But if it's a farmhouse, and you make some case that the house itself is, I mean, it's, you see the nuance in this, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. So it'd be the same with a monument like this. Do you need a certain amount of room to be able to view it? Is that part of what would be constitute the boundary? I mean, if you build, like, if you say it's just the base, could you build on all four sides and still say that constitutes a historic site? I mean, those are things that I think would need to be worked out.
To be continued.
Sorry, Laura.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Did you have any other questions at this time?
As Dr. Downer said, our concern, the Shinshu Kyokai's concern, is whether declaring this on the National Register or the State Historic Register is going to impact us if we want to do something. And the state cannot tell the city and county yes or no. They will still, if we put in a building permit to do work on the temple grounds, there's a possibility they will still bump it back here, and it will take 60, 90 days of review before anything happens. You know, even if
the board says, not a problem, go ahead and do it. There's still that big delay that's going to affect us. Our concern is we lose control over what we can do just by placing this in the register.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me add to that.
This is Keith, he's a member of the board.
Adding to what Russell said, there's also a fiscal component involved in this. Looking at the statutes, the HRS and the administrative rules, just the submission requires either engineering, architectural review or design at least 65% complete. Right? So there's the cost involved with that. If there's a cost that comes back with an environmental assessment, there's a cost involved with that. The temple is not in a position to be able to burden that type of fiscal outlay. It's just not. The temple has been a very good steward, I believe, of the monument. There's no intention to change that, but we cannot, you know, just what Russell was saying, the fiscal outlay for us and other small temples is prohibitive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think we'd like to move back now to the Allison Payne residence. Is there someone here who would like to make a presentation?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Mindy Penny Becker Wallace. This is my husband, Don Wallace.
Welcome.
And apologies for being so late.
Really. It worked out. We just shifted around.
Thank you so much for
your time.
Yes, but I think I'm
going to set you up. Do you want to get a presentation?
Normally, it would set you up somehow.
Yeah. Well, usually we set you in front of the computer to present, but you have a, your presentation is, yeah, we've got photos.
Okay, well,
Oh, no, you're going to
Don and I are to add, hopefully, our participants are redressed in the original aloha wear that my grandparents wore in 1951.
So, nice. Ma'am, can you do me a really quick favor and present yourself?
Introduce yourself
for the record.
And we should introduce ourselves at some point too.
Well, I'm not sure how to do it for the record, but I'm Mindy Pennybacker Wallace, and my husband Don Wallace and I are owners of the Allison Canning residence at 3052 Hibiscus Drive. And I prepared this petition, this application for historical designation. We've owned the home since 2015. We purchased it from my brothers after my mother's death. It's been in our family since 1951. Anything else? Okay, thank you.
We don't introduce, we never did a formal introduction of ourselves.
Go ahead. Why don't you do that?
I'm Ralph Cam.
And you're a historian on the board, right?
Historian.
And I'm Bill Chapman. I'm the vice chair, and I'm an architectural historian on the board.
And I'm Katie Stevens, the chair, and I'm a historic architect.
I'm Graham Hart, and I'm an architect.
You're a historical architect. Mm-hmm.
Historical architect.
Yes. And sorry, I meant to ask before you started, just does anybody need a really quick break? Because I realize we've been singing for anybody?
Please.
Okay. Go ahead, thank you.
So, I actually don't have very good light here, so I think I'll go back to my chair. Okay.
I can take your place.
You can need a mannequin.
You can point at the pictures.
Okay. Just to briefly summarize. First of all, I really want to thank Dr. Downer and everyone, Mary Kodama, and let's see, I've written all your names somewhere, Jessica Puff and Chandra, who wrote too, and just everyone at Shifty for just like reviewing our initial application and helping us with just putting up photographs and everything. I mean, you've just been wonderful. Right. So, the Allison Canning residence, I think you've all received our giant packet, but we feel it's significant under Criterion C because it was built in 1929 and is an integral example of French Tudor which French Tudor's historic style with elements of stick, colonial revival, and basically it's citing the placement of windows, Hawaii regional style for ventilation and island living. We feel it's also very well integrated thoughtfully with its natural environment at the foot of Diamond Head, its shape echoing the summit behind it, which you can't see in this photo, unfortunately. We feel the design is also unique, which is actually not unique in Diamond Head Terrace. Most of the houses, while they may be made in certain styles, have their own individual attributes. They're really expressive. And it's really, there's an overall eclectic, individualistic character to the neighborhood. And it's, we also feel that the house is significant criterion B at the abode of persons who were significant members of the Honolulu community. Dr. Samuel Allison was the director of venereal disease control for the State Department of Health through World War II and owned and resided in 3052 Hibiscus from 1942 to 1951. In 1947, he went on to direct the State Department of Preventive Medicine. And then my grandparents, Lawrence Soon Chung and Mary Leon Kang, bought and lived in the house from 1951 to 1972. They're very active members of the Korean-American community in Honolulu. And Lawrence was the founder of Hom's, well, not the founder, but he grew Hom's Kimchi into Hawaii's best-selling brand. He changed the original formula, and I helped design the label that they still use. It is really a family enterprise. And he also was a co-founder of the Korean Golf Club in Honolulu, because at the time, most private clubs were racially exclusive, and so the Korean Golf Club organized and petitioned to golf at private clubs at certain times in the year, mostly golfed at public clubs, and they actually had welcomed non-Korean members. My grandfather was very outspoken in the preservation of Diamond Head Terrace during the 1960s. I remember, starting late 1959, he and our neighbor, John Zabataki, on Hibiscus Drive, would go door to door against doing petitions because the neighborhood had been rezoned as high density from single family zoning. And high rise condominiums and co-op buildings were encroaching along the waterfront from Waikiki. There was a general push at the time from developers to connect Waikiki all the way to Diamond Head. Subsequent proposals for rezoning, they started with rezoning the shorefront, and then they wanted to rezone the whole neighborhood as high density, so it could have all been high rise. And I remember my grandfather talking, going to before the city council and delivering his petition and speaking out. A circuit court judge reversed the city council's zoning decision in what was called Hawaii's first major judicial decision on land use in land and power in Hawaii by Gavin Dawes. Then he was reversed by the Hawaii Supreme Court, but because so many people came to these city council meetings and to the court hearings, the city council eventually, the city developed its first general plan, which included preservation of single family zoning at Diamond Head Terrace. So, for my grandfather, a classic plantation Democrat who grew up in Wahiwa working on pineapple plantations, it was a victory of the little people and the hoi polloi. And that's what I always think of as a historic legacy of his residence in our home, although he wasn't, a big makanimak in Hawaii society. And he was proud of that. So after, it was really interesting. After I wrote up this big tome about colonial revival style with Hawaii regional influence, I spoke to an architect who said, but wait, your house is Tudor style. See the half timbering on the facade? And I thought that was just like a decorative puzzle, But no, it's actually apparently, but I did a lot of research on the Tudor style. And then the stick style, ours is the only stick Tudor style home in Diamond Head Terrace. I learned that
the stick style is an all wood facade without painted trim on the decorative half timbers. So that was a super revelation. Then I walked around the neighborhood and looked at the other Tudor homes. And so this is one of the six home Tudor cluster on Kalakaua Avenue. And lo and behold, there's the half timbering, although it's painted. And it does have diamond pane windows, leaded windows. We do have one of those in our staircase. Can't really see it in my photograph, sorry. The door really knocked me for a loop because it's exactly like our door, although our door is not arched. It's a wooden door, just like that, with the same hardware. Next slide, please. Thank you, Mary. So, I mean, we have to repaint our door, but you can see the door handle. And I'm sorry, you can't see the hardware and the hinges, but it is the same iron, black, kind of, I don't know, decorative hardware. Next slide, please. Now, I wanted to note, of course I had to note, that my mother, against the pleas of her children, had added a deck to the front facade of the house in 1998. And so I looked at these other Tudor historically designated homes, and they too have at some point added a deck on the second and first floors, some of them. And of course they've had to replace windows being so close to the sea. But I don't think they replaced them in necessarily, you know, a Brahmin Tudor style. And then next slide, please. And this house also added an extension very, very nicely, but as far as I can tell, it's an addition with the terrace again by the waterfront. And next slide. This is one of the Tudor homes across from it, which is obviously added sliding doors, glass doors, a sin that my mother committed in the front facade of our house to access our new deck. Next slide. Then this is right next door to us. My grandparents actually owned this home for a while after our family got too big and we moved into it to have some peace and quiet. So this home I know well, and the upstairs screen porch now has glass added to it. The downstairs was never a screen porch. You can see the Doric columns through the screen. So these screens and walls were added in the early 2000s, as far as I can glean. But the house nevertheless did receive, and I feel deserves, historic designation. So I'm making a plea for our own home. Okay, then next, number 8, please. Thanks, Mary. This is another designated historic Tudor home on the corner of Kelly and Coconut Avenue. And there are louvers in the upstairs window, which comforted me because there are mysterious louvers. They've always been in our basement windows. There's a half basement apartment, a maid's quarters in our home. And I just couldn't figure out, because everyone who would know is dead, whether they've been there since I was a child in the 1950s. And so I was happy that these people are able to have their louvers and somehow got past that hurdle. Next slide. So this is our, I believe it's a bonnet dormer window in the east facade of the Allison Kang home. And it illuminates the stairwell landing, which is great because there are no windows on the east side of the living room because they, for some reason, put the front door facing the rising sun, which several of our homes have. It doesn't face the street, maybe because you have to go up these curving steps to get to the house. So, next slide. And lo and behold, I found it echoed in this lovely home, the Plum Residence in Diamond Head Terrace at Kalakaua Avenue, 304 for Kalakaua. So it's a kind of bonnet-roofed bay window. And the next slide. And then also the Plum Residence has, you know, the multiple steep roof lines and gables that you can be seen in our house, the Allison Kang residence. Next. And just a review of, well, you really can't see all the roofs here, but there are a few. And the dormer window and the front facade of 3052 Hibiscus Drive. And finally, I'd like to say that that Shipley's criteria let this acknowledge the community contribution of the inhabitants. And I've spoken about my grandfather's efforts with other people in the neighborhood, including Mary Dillingham, who's not technically in Diamond Terrace because the Dillingham's La Pietra is on the other side of Ponymoy Road up the hill, but she also organized to keep it, this neighborhood single family. And I just want to conclude by saying it's likely that none of these original homes would exist today if it hadn't been for the advocacy of these neighbors, including my grandfather's friend, John Zabotaki, whose home was unfortunately razed and replaced by a duplex mega mansion about 15 years ago. So thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I'm a writer, as you probably know, we're both writers, and I've written history and about development in Hawaii for Honolulu Magazine, and a lot of World War II research, what I've been doing, as well as reviewing a lot of books. And Dr. Allison's role really struck me, as because Hawaii, of course, has its past with infectious diseases, its tragic past. But in World War II, we had 3 million soldiers and a constant influx of airmen and naval personnel flowing through and keeping the state secure from the disease standpoint was that kind of unsavory aspect that the world didn't really want to hear about. But it was a vast enterprise, and there's a great book called The First Strange Place, which I would recommend, a history of the Chinatown, Hotel Street, and prostitution. So there's a great social underlying, which I call, what historians would call the ground, from the ground up and even below ground, which I think is of increasing interest to historians and is going to receive more attention. And I'm just happy that we can tell friends that we live in the house that BD built.
You didn't build it.
I want that on the
plan. Yeah,
okay.
I'll
Sorry. So this is really, it's a fascinating thing. It's part of the history of martial law in Hawaii as well.
True.
And I'd just like to say that Lawrence Kane is an amazing man, gregarious, hyper-intelligent. He could have gone very, very far, and he harnessed the abilities that society gave him as a Korean, coming from the plantation, the first Korean woman. And he was, he invented things that the Dole Pineapple people are using, or were using recently, to help plant and irrigate things. He did it all with a high school degree. Man I admire. So I want to say thank you very much. And thanks to my wife for including me.
Built in 1929, not 1940.
I didn't say.
Well.
Whatever I
said. Thank you very much. And I'd like to commend you for this very wonderful, thorough nomination. And most owners do not undertake this by themselves. So usually people will hire somebody else. But yes.
This says right.
I told you how long it might take to do this. It's, of course, never quite what it takes. But thank you.
The Baker Act.
Yes.
I think you maybe it's like 10 cents on the dollar, basically, when they figure out how long it's going to take.
200 hours now.
Is it?
I believe that's what I thought.
I mean, Laura knows very much about lengthy, thorough nominations and how thick they end up being.
I want to compliment you, too. It's really delightful to get a owner to do their own nomination, and you brought a really special character.
See,
plus, you
passion for their house.
You know, I've been teaching historic preservation for like 40 years now, and you kind of captured the essence of style all in discussing this, because there are very few pure style houses, and my students always want to know exactly what bird this is, and I always say they're not like birds, you know, they can be a little bit of everything. So you got that down really well. That's an Oriel window, by the way. That's
okay.
No, the one you have on the side.
Thank you. How do you spell that?
O-R-I-E-L.
All
right. Yeah. Comes from Oriel College in Oxford.
Oh, right.
It's a projecting bay window with a with a separate roof over it. So.
That's so cool.
So any.
I guess it is great, but it only has one pane, so that confused me.
So it's like a bay window that doesn't go all the way down to the, that the plane of the front of the window doesn't go all the way to the bottom of it. I mean, it doesn't go down to the ground. So it's projected and supported.
Great. Thank you, Dr.
So, happy to throw that up. And I've read Faber and Bailey's book, but I think they kind of, it's sort of titillating in a way. I had to write a big report, and the average Marine or soldier had maybe one day of leave before they got shipped off to Saipan. And the biggest change statistically, I mean, the story of the early war and the prostitution is all very exciting for people, but they said the attendance at the Academy of Art and the library and local churches was the biggest change. So we don't tend to think of that side of it.
They were such good boys.
They were good boys.
Wonderful.
Most of them went down to that little, where the elite places today, there was a kind of permanent carny set up, and they went there and bought little carte de visite or whatever, a little card showing hula girls, and got taken for when they threw balls. And that's probably more the experience.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good, strong point. I will maybe we'll alter my description of the house.
You can Google my name in World War II in the parks, and you'll find something online that the Park Service did. I did something. Also, park attendance, like, hugely expanded in the national parks. They had excursions for all this stuff. So.
I would. There are some typos in here, and I don't know what the...
Oh, dear.
And I've seen them in, actual nominations that have been published.
Yes.
So I don't know if we want to correct them before they go forward.
I would think if they have any effect on the understanding of, if at least you don't believe that you're talking about a different person than you're talking about, or, I mean, if it's just a...
What is the spelling of Gavin Dawes' name?
He would be very upset.
I would. I would go through. I found some typos as I was going through it to my embarrassment.
Could we share those?
Do you want to point anything out?
Section 7, page 5, hibiscus drive M. Maybe.
It's in the second paragraph.
Third paragraph in the bottom of the page. Mm.
Your phone.
Section 7, page 5.
The sentence starts in 1920 when the land was purchased and developed.
Got it. Thank you.
And then Gavin Dawes' name is in your bibliographic references.
Right. I didn't spell it G-A-W-A-N.
No, it's, you have a D-A-W-E-S.
Oh, his last name.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
okay, didn't you?
And this is not to take away from the thoroughness and the, it was very impressive, the work that went into this.
I can't believe I'm hearing this. Thank you so much.
We love the drawing, too. That's
oh, no.
We love that.
Like,
I think that should, that's something that should be blown up and put on your wall, I think.
Well, this is all thanks to Mary, who just had innumerable phone calls and emails with me. Describe what a drawing should be, and with the arrows, and I sent it to her, and she's like, this is fine. After Don was like, no, and he's a really good cartoonist. So.
But I don't mean that cynically. I really did love the drawing.
Who was the artist on that? Drawing and camera positions.
That was me.
I thought it was delightful. It really was.
So.
You guys are, thank you. I mean, such a relief. Because, it really nearly defeated me as a journalist. As a journalist, I thought I knew how to do research, and oh boy. And I was I minored in art history in college, but never mind. This was truly a wonderful learning experience, as my grandfather would say, about everything agonizing you went through.
So a question about the terminology of the architectural terms. Should
Which
it be
part?
Tudor Revival?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's in the National Register bulletin, they actually specify the terms. So I think it is Tudor Revival.
Okay.
It's going to be fun when you do the city and county plaque because they list all of the styles on
there. Oh, really?
This is definitely a mongrel house. Right?
Toy dog.
Mongrel
house.
It's got a little bit, but actually I was delighted to see this really is like Stick Style.
Yay.
But Stick Style is a kind of earlier version of American Tudor in a way, but they sometimes picked out the color. It wasn't always a single color, depending on if you had at least in the rest of the United States, they had, sometimes people would pick out the colors.
Okay.
If you look at some of the old color manuals that were put out by paint companies and things, a lot have been reproduced. You can see sometimes they picked out the sticks.
Well, I defer to Don because it's a really good thing married to a journalist because he found it.
Yeah, I found it in the
stick.
I think it was the Portland Historical Homes treatment of their neighborhoods, and they were the first to really give a good thorough description of stick, and also it had a very short lifespan.
It did, then, just
yeah,
like shingle.
2 to 3 years. And then,
in fact, Vincent Scully wrote a book called The Shingle and the Stick Style.
Really?
It lasts about 5 years for either, so.
Yeah.
But what an influence.
Can't wait until the house is painted historically.
Well, I think we often paint it with the cheapest paints possible in Hawaii, and white was a popular color.
It seems to work, yeah.
Do you have further questions, Graham?
No, it's great.
I just had a question about your period of significance.
Yeah.
It's a little bit vague, and generally, an actual period is selected. I mean, I would suggest something like 1929 from when it was constructed, and then you need to pick a date that sort of ends that period. Often, someone would use this if they were going to basically like restore a home or restore a building. They'll say period of significance was 1930 to 1950, so I need to remove anything that was constructed after 1950. But that's only if you're doing a very serious restoration.
Okay.
But the time that you would pick to end the period of significance is sort of at the end of when something happens that's contributing to the significance of the house. So if there was somebody who was living there who was very significant to this property, maybe it would be when they passed away or moved away from the house or something. So,
though she did just have its criterion C, right?
Yeah.
So it would only be the architectural issues in this case.
Right, right. Yeah. So, but because you have, you know, A, B, and C selected, like
yeah. Oh, I thought she was only doing C.
A, B, and C.
Oh.
So you kind of need to pick something that's end. If you don't really know, in a sense, we have to pick 50 years ago,
right.
Because that would be the, you know, the last date that would be considered technically historical because of the, you know, 50 years for the register. But you might select sort of when was the last things that sort of happened at the house that are contributing to its significance.
Perhaps when Mr. Kenning moved next door.
Yeah.
Normally the register encourages to avoid B, right, Alan? Unless it's really necessary.
Encourages what?
Discourages the use of criterion B because individuals, you've got to make a really strong case. I mean, you have, but then you're sort of interpreting it, their life in the house. It's different.
I
do think that a lot of this nomination relies on her grandfather. So I do think B is appropriate here. And I do think that, you know, in terms of the end date of the period of significance, should have something to do with him.
I think so too, if that's going to be the emphasis.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's where I heard. Honestly, I have not read the nomination. Thank you for thanking me, but it's Jessica and Mary and the Chan who do all the work. I just take credit by signing the letters.
It's Mary. It's Mary. For this.
Thank you for your ferocity.
Thank you, all of you, for reading it. And
so
thank you for
resolved
signing
when
it.
It's going to
I think
end.
So. So, yeah, it might be when he moved out of the home.
That's
that would
really
make sense.
Thank you very
1970.
Much. Oh, it
would
have been
71,
I think.
Okay.
So that's
old. Yeah.
Okay.
So, 1929 to 1970.
Not 100 years.
50 years.
It's 52 years old.
I think they must have moved there in 1970, because my grandmother died in 1971, and she was in that house. So that's 50 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the 50-year age limit would start at the date of the start of the period of significance. So you could have a period of significance that goes all the way up to today, and it still would be a historic property if it was constructed 50 years ago, if that makes sense. So end date of the period of significance doesn't have to be within that, within the last 50 years.
But luckily it is.
I thought I understood that it does. It can only be up to 50 years.
Particularly the National Register is very picky about allowing it to extend in the 50-year period. And for the Hawaii Register, as we talked about earlier, 50 years is a bright line distinction. You can't extend it beyond that. So 73 would be the absolute end date possible for the Hawaii Register.
When you look at the history of the dates on this, there was a period we used to had the end date 50 years earlier than present.
Yeah.
And we got our hands sort of knuckles wrapped on that because they didn't like that.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. I was just saying in terms of like a person's life, if they were still living in it today, the period of significance was based on that.
I guess we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
It's not here.
So the National Register, they are still so thrilled that we're actually sending down the nationals there because there was a hiatus, a period when none were coming in. So I have a sense that they've been a little more flexible with us than they have been some of the others.
Yes.
I don't know how much longer we can count on that.
Well, I think the territories to Virgin Islands is the same. So.
So I was especially happy to see this because I used to live on Hibiscus Place for a little while.
You look familiar.
And I could see this house, but it's kind of hard to see it without being really obvious and walking up the street and, you know, standing there. But I did wonder a little bit about whether Charles Ingerson would be considered also as contributing as a significant person because of his contributions to the Diamond Head Terrace area. But
that'd be cool. I could add to that. There's certainly a lot of biographical information about him. And where did
multiple significant persons?
The wonderful two-inch property at the top of the hill?
Mm-hmm.
The one just below it on the left, which was kind of a horrible modern structure, but we rented that house for about a year and a half.
When was that?
So we moved out about a year ago, so it was the year and a half prior. So the fall of 2020 to early
2020. You must know Francois Miller. He lives
just
down.
Yes.
So did he live there?
We could always smell his fires.
So did Ingerson live here too? Did he live in this house?
That was Ingerson's home. He built those two homes you lived in.
Yes. Yeah. That's a wonderful, beautiful
house.
There
is like guidance on them. Thing though about the duration, consistency of living there can't be something he built or and didn't live in. There's a seems like
so
a
maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but I just thought because
he lived there. He built it for his family. Does that make him significant resident?
Well, he would need to be significant to your property, and I just thought maybe because he developed so many in that area, including this house.
He was the builder of our home.
Yeah, right.
He lived in the house.
No.
He didn't live in our house.
Right. That's true.
So that's why he wouldn't
because
be
he
That's
built,
where the A...
He lived in House of the Street.
That would be covered under A, I guess,
the
history of the area.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And the only other comment I had was on Section 8, you describe criteria A, B, and C. I'm sorry. Yeah, under Section 8, like after the statement of significance summary paragraph, you check the boxes A, B, and C, and D. And then it has criteria A, B, and C there. But then when you go into narrative statement of significance, you describe criteria A, B, and C again, but there is some slightly different information. So I wonder if it would be better to combine all that into, you know, one place where you're describing A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Because the first criteria A talks about, you know, this was
Native Hawaiian lands. It was granted to Campbell, and that is one thing that's important about it. But then the next part where you're describing criteria A, it talks about other things that are significant. So I just didn't know if it would be more clear to combine those.
That'd be great if it's permitted. I wasn't sure if they each had to have a summary paragraph.
And then they had to have a long paragraph, but it would be better.
It would be, because the Native Hawaiian part is incidentally interesting, but not part of the history of the house in a way, right?
Well, it's part of the significance of the property. Yeah.
Property transfers.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. So maybe, Mary, if you had any thoughts on that. Or do we need to keep those description separate?
Yeah, I miss it.
I think it's a good suggestion, Katie. I think it's proper to mention that what it significant was in pre-contact times or other things, but unless it bears directly on the history of this property, it's not part of the A part.
Okay.
So you could leave it in there, but you then talk about the general history, then it makes sense.
Maybe I should bring the Hawaiian transfers forward to just the initial narrative.
That's
what is scribed on Hit Terrace, uh-huh. Its founding.
I think the first part is trying to, that's where you state each of those criteria and why it's important under those criteria. But the next one is more talking about significance and not necessarily like having to reference each of the criteria, you know, A, B, and C, I believe.
I would think that your first one would be just a summary of all three, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you probably should still talk about A, B, and C.
So the narrative statement of significance does not, when it said provide at least one paragraph for each area of significance, I thought it meant criterion, but it just means
there's something called areas of significance. That's, if you look at the bulletin, it's different from the criteria.
Got
right?
it. So you can just take the criteria out from there. Thanks, Katie.
Yeah, or move it. Move the things that are specifically talking about criteria to the first part.
Got it. Great edit.
That's all my questions. Other questions? Anybody like to make a motion?
I move that the property at the at 3052 Hibiscus Drive. I move that. I've forgotten our wording.
Placed
on the State Register of Historic, the Hawaii Register of Historic Places. Under criteria A, B, and C. And National Register, is that?
Would you like it to be recommended for the National Register?
Oh, sure.
And that we recommend that it be submitted to the National Register of Historic Places under the same criteria.
I'll second.
Thank you. Okay. Any further discussion?
Thank you.
And compliment you on your good job. And Mary, thank you.
Okay.
Mary did excellent nominations when she was a student. So
like to have a vote. All in favor of placing this onto the historic state register.
Aye.
Yes. Four unanimous.
Okay. Really?
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay. So, not done yet. Okay. Next subject here is the meeting dates.
Oh, yes.
The next subject here is meeting dates on our agenda.
We propose, I believe, setting the meeting dates for the next three meetings, or it's essentially, I think you may have voted on the meeting dates, so I guess it's just approving the next meeting dates for May 19th, August 11th, and November 17th.
Okay, and would somebody like to make a motion for the limited meeting? for May 18th.
Do we anticipate? We don't know yet, right?
We have five properties identified that have been submitted, five nominations, I should say, that were submitted before the last due date. They're all in within the city and county of.
Except the first
no,
one.
No, the first one is not, yeah. Yes. There is a possibility, too, that we might get the information for the two churches that we had to pull from this agenda. Those are. At least one is on Molokai, the other one might be on Maui. I don't know that we could include them in a limited meeting, but we could do a limited meeting for Charles H. Dole residents, the King residents, Waikiki Yacht Club, and the Kazuo and Mary Yamani residents, potentially, if you so chose.
So, do I
make a motion?
And also the Hamakua Country Club, which should be.
We did not receive that one before.
I did. It was definitely received before the deadline.
This is on the Hamakua Coast?
Hamakua Country Club. It was definitely.
On the Big Island, right?
Yes.
We will have to.
We won't be doing that.
Definitely need a site visit.
We'd like to do a site visit.
That's a scary golf cart.
I'm sorry, so can you.
Yeah.
The,
so
you move.
The date we
want. May 18th. I'm sorry, yeah, May 18th.
So I move that we have a, is it called?
Limited meeting.
Limited meeting on May 8th. 18th.
For the reasons of.
For reasons of privacy, security of the owners and.
Yeah. Okay.
Second.
Okay, thank you. All in favor of having a limited meeting on May 8th?
18. You caught it from me, sorry.
So he returned the favor.
Yeah. Ralph, can you be the second grade on that?
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we have our list of submitted nominations with possibly some more additions.
Yes, and we will update you all as we get more information on those outstanding ones that we're waiting for more.
And you're going to check on Laura Ruby.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. That's included. So that one and potentially those two churches. Were basically, the two church nominations, we had some edits that we requested, and we needed photographs. I think that they may have like scanned their nomination using a black and white scanner and didn't set it to the color setting. So if you had looked at those nominations that I feel like we might have posted online or sent to you, you would have seen all the images blacked out.
Mm-hmm. Were they done long ago? Was that nomination done long ago, or
they
is it
were,
recent?
They were submitted recently. They were submitted, I can't remember, I want to say December, but I could be wrong on that. I can't speak to when the author first drafted them, or if they had submitted them previously. I don't
It's interesting, it was like typed onto the form, it looked like.
The nominations were done by the former pastor of the church. I think he had just either retired or moved back to the mainland, and he wanted, I think, to do this for the community, for the churches. And we had sent a letter to the Archdiocese, and we haven't received any comments from them either on additions or anything like that to the nominations. So we're just really looking for photographic documentation.
Dr. Downer, do you want to talk about the traditional cultural properties at all, or we're waiting?
Well, I think it's up to you. I've got about 20 minutes. I have to get down to be there in time to park and go over my hearing. I have actually arrived at hearings after I was supposed to testify. It's just not a good look at all. In fact, a couple years ago, got to a hearing after everybody had left the room. There were two senators left, so anyway. So
make it brief.
So we have been given to understand that there are traditional National Register nominations for Mauna Kea and for Kilauea as traditional cultural properties. We don't know where they are in the drafting process. We've been told that it'll come to us in the next 6 months. Well, it remains to be seen. But you should be aware that it's coming. I have, for obvious reasons, given a lot of thought to Mauna Kea, and I think, you know, my personal and professional opinion is that it is no straight-faced argument that it isn't a TCD. I have not thought as much about Kilauea, because we haven't had, you know, we haven't been proposing to build telescopes on it. But I think there's, you know, the same arguments for, you know, that would apply to Mauna Kea will apply to Kilauea as well. So I just wanted you guys to be aware of that. The department is aware, I don't know if the governor is aware, obviously, you know, because it, you know, includes, as I, we understand it, two separate nominations, but because Mauna Kea is one of them, obviously this is a very sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. It may, you know, if it is the board's will, we could prepare a presentation, for example, on traditional cultural properties and present that at the meeting before we expect the nominations to come before. Mm-hmm. So it has a little better handle on it. I mean, these are, the bulletin has been around for 30 years, but these, you know, using it for nominations is still pretty rare. So I'm going to, Bill asked me a question when the folks heard the Kapolei nomination as a TCP. It's really hard to talk about precedents because there have been so few of these listed. And, you know, I'm sure the parsers would deny that, but I think that's the reality. So,
To my mind, it's textbook. I mean, it really is. If you look at Tom King's stuff early on, this is exactly what he was talking about. So,
I certainly agree. And I should, you know, just in the interest of transparency, Tom and Pat and I talked so much about that, you know, when I was at Navajo. We were passing stuff back and forth because I was working on a similar project, although I didn't call it TCPs, I called it traditional historic properties. TCP is now the term of art. But, you know, there's stuff in there that I'm sure is mine, and, you know, probably stuff in my dissertation that I'm sure is Tom's and Pat's.
It's obvious it was really thought through. There's a lot of counterintuitive stuff, I remember, like a parking lot used for ceremonies.
Yeah, in fact,
even though it's a parking lot, it hasn't lost its...
And it's still used for ceremonies.
Right.
You know, and that was actually... that came about basically as a screw you from the New Mexico SHPF. He opposed this idea, and he demanded, you know, in a Section 106 review, this has got to be, you know, National Register, right. It's a parking lot. And everybody agreed that, yes, it is right. So,
but then that would bring in the issue of, do telescopes then disturb the qualities of what makes that a traditional cultural property? And I guess could make an argument they don't, but.
That's certainly an issue, and it will be, you know, I don't know, honestly, I have no idea where the 30-meter telescope is anymore. That may be starting over from scratch, or it may be abandoned, I don't know. You know, in terms of its traditional cultural, I mean, there have been telescopes there for a long time. And although those are, I mean, you know, as you fly into a big island, you realize, before I got here, I was thinking, that's an enormous mountain. What is a telescope? I don't get it. And then you see how big they are. It is really obvious. I mean, they just jump out.
Yeah, you can see them from the ground. You love
it.
So, I mean, but does that actually contribute?
Well, that's another issue, but that also does it detract from what makes it a traditional cultural property?
It's kind of an
aesthetic issue more than a... cultural issue.
There are a bunch of really interesting issues.
There's an interesting case going on right now with the Section 106 undertaking up at the Straits of Mackinac, and there's a pipeline that's been going under the Mackinac Bridge, and it's a similar issue to what happened, I think, with the Dakota Access Pipeline and the question of water as a contributing resource to a traditional cultural property. And if you contaminate that water, what does that do to the TCP in practice? Mm-hmm.
remember Wahegila Ridge was proposed as a TCP here.
Yeah.
But then I got to testify for that one, but I got to admit, I actually felt under the guise of a traditional cultural property with high voltage wires distract from that. It was, I saw it as more as an aesthetic issue, but I didn't say that. But
you know, and I mean, I think in, you know, obviously the nomination is sort of independent of the questions about what are effect. I mean, so if you know, if we're kind of getting further into this because we don't have the nominations to know what they say. But I mean, for example, if the board got a nomination for Mauna and decided that, look, the existence of the telescopes is such an impact on it that it diminishes its integrity, then maybe it's not eligible. I mean, I think my personal perspective is that's a hard argument to make. But I think in terms of otherwise, you know, would building the TMT have an adverse effect on it? I think that's absolutely going to be a consideration if the National Science Foundation actually puts money into it. But it's not a, that's not in my view a question for a nomination unless they bring it up as an issue.
In the bulletin 38, the TCP bulletin 38, I think we wrote it down to send you the link. If we didn't send it to you, I can send it to you after this meeting. But that comment period for the new draft of bulletin 38 is open until sometime in April, I believe. So even if you didn't want to submit public comments, but you wanted just to review it, the draft is still available to the public.
Right.
So once you receive the nomination, which that was supposed to be sometime this year, we might look at the other number of nominations that will be for the next meeting and maybe add another meeting just...
Discussion.
Yeah, because yeah. But there's probably be a lot of people who want to testify and.
You know, either a discussion meeting for it, or it could be the way, say, the land board handles controversial issues, where they said, "Here's this item is on the agenda and it will be heard at this particular time." You know, so that people don't have to come. You know, say land board, which can go on for 12 hours, 14 hours. And, you know, so there's something you're really interested in, you can't be assured unless the board has decided we're setting aside this time for this issue. So that's an alternative.
Yeah.
We'll deal with that when we actually have something in front of, you know, in our hands.
Okay.
Interesting.
Excited.
We'll be a more important board than before, huh?
Or more than that, maybe.
Yes,
before Dr. Downer has to leave, I have an important question. Namely, we have a question about whether the diacriticals, that is, the Okinas and the Kamakos, need to be included in the documents, or is it optional, or is it a mix and match? We need to know that, because I have putting the diacriticals in as appropriate to the Hawaiian context, but maybe it's something that the board needs to review and recommend.
That's a good suggestion.
We're coming for the next, you know, set of nominations, and how should we do it properly?
You might want to have a conversation about that, because there is some issues with ADA accessibility in use of diacriticals in nominations and things like that, so you may want to consider.
That's another issue I hadn't thought about.
Yeah, some ADA accessible software doesn't pick up on certain diacritical markers.
Yeah.
Guidance from the National Park Service about?
There's guidance that the Park Service uses on the reporting that comes from, I forget the name of them, there's a governmental agency that provides like guidance, and I think it's like, it goes from font to font size, and then the use of special characters and markings, and to kind of limit their use, because those, like the software that may narrate, or even the software that may manipulate text, can not necessarily pick up on things and then wish things.
I even have that problem in my stuff. You get a square instead of a diacritic.
We can. I'll ask Park Service if they have
specific. The standard is that you use diacritical marks. Unless the sort of the
official name lacks it.
Yeah.
Such as the state of Hawaii.
As the state of Hawaii itself. Yeah, and it's complicated. I mean, we almost need to figure out a way. I mean, this is more burden for you to have some level of proofreading by this office. And I get upset when quotes are put in diacritics when they weren't originally quoted with the diacritic. That's an issue, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think by the same token, if you're quoting some other piece of work, you need to use whatever standard. So if it doesn't have the diacritic, it's not
right.
In a quotation.
I mean, I'm doing something now. It's just tedious, but I mean, you got to think it through. And
yeah.
Daughters of Hawaii now has a diacritic, but back in the 20s didn't. And
yeah.
Then everybody gets the Okina wrong anyway.
we can look at all the state rules and stuff and what the Park Service recommends and send it to you. And if you want to review it and then make a decision on guidance for that.
It's a good suggestion, Laura.
Thank you. Thanks, Laura.
That is the standard Honolulu Magazine uses. So the
original
there you have it.
And you know how people fight over that. Right?
Yeah.
Chicago style book has never heard of this kind of stuff.
Andrew.
Hi, super quick announcement. Andrea with the Historic Hawaii Foundation. In partnership with the National Park Service, we're having a webinar on April 26th, considering integrity when determining eligibility for the National Register of Historic Places.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
Okay. Any other questions, comments?
I have one thing I want to. I know you worked really hard to get this set up, but I wonder if there's a way we could return to some of the way we had the audience set up. I thought it was awkward today, having them sit behind, and it's awkward for when the presenters are, that they don't have a podium or a space that they're presenting from.
Yeah, this is
not
an ideal space.
Well, I think it could be done if we think it through a little bit.
Yeah, I think it could be done. I think we weren't expecting that many people to come up, and I don't think we were expecting to have the presenter set up the way this was. So we'll definitely.
We've always been handicapped a little bit, but even when we had it in the state office building, we had an audience section, and then we had a table people came up to. And
you know, when you're in the boardroom is set up for that sole purpose. So, I mean, when we get there, we don't have to think about it very much.
Yeah. And it was sort of okay when we did it down at the fire station area, down at the kind of the old brewery, that was sort of well set up.
That space has been occupied by another office now. So, yeah. Our next meeting will be at the boardroom and at Kalani Moku.
Great. Okay.
So then we'll have a little bit, it's already sort of set up for us a little bit. So we don't have to create space. Okay.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Historic architecture.